चलिए हम बंधु अनि भगिनीनो नमो बुधाय जय भीम। बालमराठी इतना है। So, brothers and sisters, first of all, I have a message for you. Just an hour ago, I was on the phone to England. And I was talking to Bhante Sangrakshana. So I told him that just in 1 hour's time, I was going to be giving a talk here at the Mahavihara. And of course he knows the Mahavihara very well. He laid the foundation stone. And he's come quite a number of times here. So first of all he said, well, I'm very, very pleased that people are coming together to celebrate Sangha. He said that's a very, very important thing to rejoice in, to celebrate. And he said, I should convey to all of you all his blessings. So you can be sure that Bhante is thinking of us here. He's just had his lunch. Because they're 5.5 hours behind us. So he'll be sitting up in his room. When he looks out the window, it'll be winter. But in his imagination, he will be here with us tonight. And he'll definitely be thinking of Sangha with us. So we're looking at Sangha as something very active. We're seeing that Sangha is something that each of us needs to take direct responsibility for. Sangha doesn't come just by offering Agavati. It doesn't come from saying mantras. Coconuts do not create Sangha. Sangha is something that we have to make between us, brothers and sisters. Sangha is an active force. And it comes, of course, principally out of our Maitri. It comes out of our Maitri for each other on the basis of the Buddha Dhamma and Sangha. And so every one of us needs to be learning more and more about how to contribute to creating Sangha here at the Mahavihara. And I want everyone to go away. I want us all to go away with a clear idea of what we can do, what we will do. Because it has to be an act continuously reperformed. Now, of course, Sangha is very, very good for us. It's wonderful to participate in Sangha. I felt that very strongly after the talk last night. There was such a happy atmosphere and so much friendliness between people. I'm sure you all felt so happy when you left here. I'm sure you slept well. I'm sure you had good dreams. I'm sure that when you got up in the morning, you meditated more easily if you meditated. So Sangha is a great delight, a great joy. It's the most wonderful thing in the world, you could say. And it supports our spiritual life. But Sangha has a greater importance than this. You could say that for us as individuals, Sangha is something that supports us, that gives us great delight. But Sangha is for other people too. Sangha has a function within society. And society needs Sangha badly. We all know about the Indian social situation. We know that India is a republic. We know that India is a democracy. We know that India is ruled by a constitution which is based on liberty, equality, fraternity and justice. We know that this is what India is supposed to be. But what is the reality? The reality is India is divided. I don't need to go on about this. It's something we all know very, very well. This system of graded inequality divides one Indian from another. So there can be very little bandhutva. Well, Baba Sahib believed that liberty, equality and fraternity would come to India on the basis of the Buddha Dhamma. But let's concentrate especially on bandhutva. How do we bring about bandhutva? Well, the first thing is people need an example of bandhutva. So we have to be an example of bandhutva. We have to show what India can be. We have to have a sense of brotherhood, sisterhood with each other. So that we feel for each other, yes, as brothers and sisters. Well, Baba Sahib said, bandhutva is reverence and respect of one person for another. He said, in other words, maitri. Bandhutva, manje maitri. This is what Baba Sahib said. He said even further, much more interesting, he said that democracy is bandhutva. Bandhutva, manje, maitri. So you all know your mathematics, therefore, democracy, manje, lokshahi, matlab, maitri. A equals B, therefore B equals C. That's not quite the right logic, but you know what I mean. So yes, if we want to bring bandhutva to India, we need to show bandhutva. Probably many of you will remember your first experience experience of Sangha. It's often when you go on retreat, you experience that wonderful sense of Maitri, of brotherhood, sisterhood. And then you think, yes, this is what I want. And in a way you think, this is what India needs. So that's one of our most important functions, is to exemplify Bandhutva. The Sangha is showing what India could be. The problem is, of course, that we're also sometimes showing what India already is. Yeah, we bring in the old caste mentality even into the Sangha. We've got both sides. Sometimes we're a genuine Sangha, sometimes we're just the old India. But what India needs is examples of the future. So we must try together, brothers and sisters, to create an example for India. But if India is really to change, if Baba Saheb's message is really to be fulfilled, effort is needed. People need to take the spirit of Sangha out into the world. Yesterday I talked about our brothers and sisters going to Bihar. And I'm very pleased there's somebody here from Bodh Gaya. He knows very well the situation there. They have so much need Sangha. So we had our Sangha Dutas. And they went into the villages around Bodh Gaya and they were able to communicate the Sangha. And those boys and girls experienced something they never thought they would ever find. So the function of the Sangha is to communicate the Dhamma, the spirit of the Sangha, throughout India. The function of the Sangha is to be a sort of team communicating the Dhamma throughout India. So, if we are to do this, we need to understand what it consists in. We've already seen that Sangha means Maitri. And we've seen that Maitri is an active karma. Just this afternoon, Kumarajiv pointed out something in that sutta I mentioned yesterday. He mentioned that the Pali says mettang manokamma, which means metta is a karma of the mind, an action of the mind. So it's something you have to do. We emphasized this very strongly yesterday. Each of us needs to actively cultivate the spirit of Maitri. We constantly need to say every day, may I be well, may my friend be well, may my person I don't know very well be well, may my enemy be well. Uh, may all beings be well. We need to train our minds to have these kind of thoughts. And then the Sangha will naturally come between us. And we saw yesterday there are various things we need to do. For instance, we need to come together, often in large numbers. We need to meet in harmony. We need to experience deep states of meditation. We need to go on retreat. And so on. I mentioned seven things that the Buddha says we must do. So you could say that Maitri brings the Sangha into being. These seven things, they help the Sangha to be preserved. But how do we spread the Sangha? How do we attract people to the Sangha? How do we get people to come to us and stay with us? Well, the Buddha had a lot to say about this. And particularly said there are four factors that draw people to the Sangha. They're what are known as the four Sangraha Vastus. Sangraha means drawing together. Sometimes it's called unifying, unification. But it means gathering scattered things and bringing them together. So vastu means element or even thing. So these are the four things that we must do to bring people to the Sangha. The four things that we must do, it's sometimes said, to bring people to convert. How do you get people to convert to the Buddha Dhamma? Well, sometimes we think the way we bring that we make them convert is by arguing with them. Sometimes when you hear people giving talks, you think that the way you make people convert is by shouting at them. Sometimes when you hear some talk, you think, not here of course, but when you hear a talk it sounds so harsh. So people are bullying people into the Sangha. This does not work. People won't come if that's what you do. People sometimes think that the way you bring people to the Sangha is by arguing. No, you're wrong. No, it's not like that. This is the way it is. People are not converted by that. Think of the 14th of October 1956. You know that 4 lakhs people, we don't know exactly how many, 4 or 5 lakhs of people, poured into the Dikshabhumi. So few of them knew what they were going to do. I talked to our Dhammacharya Nyanashuri, She was there as a little girl. She was there sitting looking up at Baba Sahib from just below him. And I spoke to an old lady at Bodh Gaya from Maharashtra who was there on the 14th of October 56. So if you ask them, well, why did you go? It's quite simple. Because Baba Sahib said, come. They didn't know what they were coming to. They didn't know about the Buddha Dhamma. They had tremendous faith in Baba Sahib. And it was not a foolish faith. It was a faith that had come because they'd seen what he'd done for them. They knew they could trust Baba Sahib. Because Baba Sahib always worked for them. He always looked after their interests. Now Baba Sahib could sometimes be quite fierce, we know that. But it was always a kind fierceness. And people knew that they could trust him. They were drawn to Baba Sahib. You know, like iron filings being drawn to a magnet. If Baba Sahib said the Buddha Dhamma is the best thing for us, they will go to the Buddha Dhamma. They were not wrong. Because they saw the quality of the man, they saw the quality of his care for them. I'll just tell you a little story because it really moved me. One of these ladies at the retreat we had in Bodh Gaya told me her story. I think she was 71. But she was the strongest person on the retreat. And she just told me about her experience of Baba Sahib. She said she was just 18 at the time. She had 3 children. And she was staying at the house of her parents-in-law, of course. And Baba Sahib came to the house. So she was in the kitchen, peering around the Buddha. And her mother-in-law was saying, go on, greet Baba Sahib. Really put her head back. But then Baba Sahib called, said, daughter, come. And he said, come, don't be frightened. I am your father, don't be frightened of me. And I care for you like a father cares for a daughter. And then she just went forward and touched his feet. And she was one of the strongest people I've ever seen. You could see that Baba Sahib was still alive inside her. So that's the spirit that took people to the Dikshabhumi. So what draws people to the Buddha Dhamma is the quality of people. It's the quality of the Sangha. If the Sangha has qualities, if the Sangha is a genuine quality, people are drawn like iron filings to a magnet. So if we want the Sangha to grow, that means if we want to change India, we need to have these qualities. So these four Sangraha Vastus are the four qualities that we need. So I'll talk about two tonight, two tomorrow. So what are the four? First of all, I'll tell you that. The first is Dana. Then Dana is Dana.
Dana,
matlab Dana. Priyavadita is the second. Which means, loving speech. The third is Artacharya. That means beneficial actions that benefit others. And the last is Samanartata, which means exemplification. So we'll look at all these four, two tonight, two tomorrow. So we start with the most basic, Dana and Priyavadita. So just let me first of all illustrate how Dana attracts. It's a very simple way. Well, just at the beginning of this program, Dhammodaya gave me a garland. How did I feel when I was given the garland? In a way, I was given it by him on behalf of all of you. I felt welcome. I felt happy. I felt pleased to be with you. Srimala, did you feel like that? Yeah, she did. Dhammashali? Yeah, there you are. You see, it works. So yes, if you're given something, well, you feel a connection. And then it really makes you feel part of things. Now, you're very good at this aspect of it in India. In India, there's a very, very good attitude to guests. I can never remember the saying, the guest is like a god. What is it? Ah, yes, the guest is like a god. When I'm in India, I'm a god all the time. But I don't have to do any of a god's duties. But yes, you're always treated like something special. It's almost overwhelming when you come to India. I'm ashamed to say in England we're not like this. When you go to visit somebody in England, they open the door and say, "Hi, come in." And they say, "Would you like a cup of tea?" You'll say, "Oh yes, please, I'd like a cup of tea." They say, "Well, the kettle's over there, the tea's in the pot there." We're not really that bad, but we've learned from India. We're half Indian. But India is really wonderful for hospitality. Although some people have said the first day is very good for hospitality. Second day, not so good. And the third day, you're waiting for the guest to go.
was some Marathi saying, I can't remember. But
anyway, you know what I mean. When you're given something, you feel a connection. It can just be a flower. And you feel a connection. So giving makes a connection. When people come in contact with a Sangha, they need to receive something. They need to be welcomed. And they need to be actively welcomed with some sort of generous gift. Really, everybody coming to the Mahavihara should be given something. Anybody who comes for the first time, they should receive something. Just a flower? Just some simple thing that says, welcome. Something that makes a connection between you and them. So, dana attracts people to the Sangha. When they receive dana, they feel attracted. When they see dana going on, they feel attracted. So we need to study, we need to think about dana. And the Sangha should have an atmosphere of dana. So the Buddha has quite a lot to say about what dana means, what it consists in. And he says, first of all, who do you give to? Well, first of all, you give to your own dependents, to those who depend upon you. Your own family. In English we have an expression, charity begins at home. You need to be looking after yourself and your dependents first. Then the Buddha says we should look after the poor, the sick and the helpless. People who can't look after themselves. For instance, the very old. Or those who are mentally disturbed. We should be making sure that we look after those who cannot look after themselves. So we should look after each other. Look after each other when we're sick. Look after each other when we're old. It's a wonderful feature of the Buddha Dhamma. You know that at the time of Samrat Ashok, well, India seems to have been a sort of paradise. And, you know, Ashoka had those rock edicts. And he was telling people what they should do to create a good society. And do you know, one of the edicts says there should be hospitals for animals. So even for animals there should be care. Frankly, you know, in England we're a bit soft with animals. We're very sentimental about animals. But people in India, not so sentimental about animals. And you see quite a bit of cruelty to animals. But at the time of Samrat Ashok, even animals had hospitals. Then the Buddha says we should look after those who are leading a full-time Dhamma life. Those who dedicate themselves to the Dhamma, well, they need support. But we need a lot more full-time Dhamma workers. There's a huge job to be done in India. We need lakhs of people just spreading the Dhamma. You know, Baba Sahib said, well, that not just bhikshus and bhikshunis. He saw no reason why there should not be Dhamma pracharaks who were householders. But they need support. And it's the duty of the overall community to support those who are working full time to spread the Dhamma. And we need many, many more people to come forward to do this work and many people to support them. I think there are probably 20 or 30 crore of people in India who are open to the Dhamma.
20 or 30,
yeah. The people who have a strong connection with Baba Sahib. And it's not hard then to bring them to the Buddha Dhamma. But we need people doing that work. And those people have to fill their bellies. And they have to meet their expenses. So we should be supporting those who are leading a full-time Dhamma life. Finally, we should give to our fellow Sangha members. Bhante, in one lecture that he gave, says that the Sangha should be characterized by the constant exchange of gifts. Everybody in the Sangha should be giving everybody else a gift. Then we come closer and closer together. And many, many people will be drawn to us. Then the Buddha says, what should we give? Well, of course, we give material things. We give the things that people need. If they need food, we give them food. If they need medicine, we give them medicine. Whatever they need, we give them. But then he says, it's quite obvious, there's so much to say, but I'm not going to say it. But I'm just going to draw attention to the fact that even round here, there are people living in poverty. From our Jivak Centre, we're doing work amongst people who have nothing. So even immediately around the Mahavihara, not so far away, there are people who have desperate need. And we should try to give to them. And I was talking yesterday about what I saw in Bihar. I saw it also around Kushinagara in UP. People who really have nothing. Who can hardly manage to feed themselves. So there's a lot we need to do to give the material things that people need even here in Pune. The Buddha says then that we can give something that you might not think you can give. He said we can give fearlessness. You know, you sometimes see that mudra, the Buddha in this mudra. It means fear not. Don't worry. This is something that people badly need. I've been thinking about this a lot. What is it that keeps caste going? We know how caste started. Well, we have some ideas about how caste started. Certain interests forced that system upon India. But now everybody goes along with that system. Even those who suffer most from it, they always think there's somebody lower. Most caste atrocity is not between the highest caste and lowest, it's between castes of more or less the same level. So what's at the bottom of caste? This is something I've puzzled over since I first came to India. I often say we've got our social problems in England, but we don't have caste. Or rather, the only caste we had is that which Indians bring. So what's at the bottom of caste? It's insecurity. Caste is the basis of security. Now it's strange because caste is also the basis, it's why you feel insecure. Caste also creates insecurity in society. But the way you deal with that social insecurity is by strong identification with your own caste. So at the bottom of caste is insecurity. If we want to change caste, we have to give security, we have to give confidence. I've so often heard people say, I don't mind who my daughter marries. She can marry whatever caste she wants. But what will other people think? So she must marry an Aryan caste. I've heard this so many times in many different ways. I'm not making this up. Most people, when you ask them, they don't believe in caste. They only follow caste practice because other people expect it. So in other words, to get out of caste, you need a lot of confidence. You say, I don't care what other people think. I'm going to live by what I believe is right. I'm going to live by what I believe is right. I'm going to live free from caste. I'm refusing to play the game of caste. And of course, that's quite dangerous. But if enough people stand up like that, caste will go. Thank you. So what people need above all is confidence. In so many areas of life, they need confidence. You need the confidence to stand up for what you think is right. I hear this about corruption, for instance. I don't want to take chai pani. I don't believe in that. But if I don't take it, then other people will blame me. I've had this said to me, honestly. We need confidence to live a good life. So it's as if everybody is insecure. And you need people with confidence who then give others confidence. I just need to say one word. Baba Sahib. Baba Sahib's confidence changed the lives of millions of people. People said, if Baba Sahib says that we should get rid of the gods, out the gods go. And Jnanashuri told me that they went straight home from the Dikshabhumi, they went inside the house, tore down the gods, just threw them in the river. Baba Sahib's confidence communicated to them. So we need to give the gift of fearlessness. Underneath the surface, India is a deeply insecure society. So what we need to give people is the confidence to break out of the old system. We need to give them the confidence to live decent human lives. Baba Sahib said, in order to be a Buddhist, you need to have the courage to stand alone. So we need to give each other that confidence. And then we need to give that confidence to the crores of people in India who live miserable lives and don't dare stand up. I remember I read Nanak Chand Ratu's memoir of Baba Sahib recently. And there's a story there that one day some people came to Delhi from Maharashtra. And they came to see Baba Sahib. And they were saying to Baba Sahib, oh, in our village there's something very unpleasant has happened. They'd been attacked by some. Yeah, they'd been attacked by some villagers. And Baba Sahib didn't say, oh, I'm very sorry, they're there. He stopped, he just started saying to them, why are you telling me? Go back and beat them. Don't be weak. If you are weak, they will beat you again. Show you're strong. You're human beings. You can stand up for yourselves. What can I do? I'm in Delhi, you're in Maharashtra. I can't go and beat them. Go and do it yourself. So Baba Saheb gave this sort of confidence to people. And a huge change took place in Maharashtra. You are the sons, daughters, grandchildren of that change. That needs to happen all over India. Many, many people in India still live like your ancestors. You need to give them the confidence to stand up. So fearlessness, I think, is a very, very important gift that the Sangha can give. I saw that so clearly with those boys and girls in Bodh Gaya. They saw in that context that they were respected. They were treated as fellow human beings. And they started to say, well, we're going to make sure we get a good education. We're going to come together to work through our difficulties. We're not going to marry that boy. So you see people beginning to take control of their lives. Just through contact with the Sangha. So the gift of fearlessness is the greatest gift the Sangha can give the world at the moment. Well, there are other things on the list, but time is marching. Every one of them I could speak at length, but I've only got two nights to speak on. And some of you need to go home and eat. But yes, we should give education, the Buddha says. Well, of course, Baba Saheb says that. Educate, agitate, organize. And especially educate. So we should get education ourselves and give education to others. That's the way out for a lot of people. The Buddha says also that we should be prepared to give even our life and limbs. There are times when it's necessary for us to put ourselves in danger for the sake of the Dhamma. There's times when it's necessary for us to put ourselves in danger in order to help other people. And in the Buddha Dhamma, it's said to be something very, very special indeed to be able to sacrifice yourself in that way. Of course, you don't do it unnecessarily. But sometimes it's necessary. For the greater benefit, it may even be necessary for you to lay down your life. And our strength, our conviction in the Buddha Dhamma should be strong enough for that. In a way, I think of Baba Saheb as a bit of an example like that. He obviously was a very sick man at the end of his life. He was a very sick man at the end of his life. And probably if he'd had paid more attention to his health, given relaxed and retired, he could have lived a long life. But no, he knew he had to work for his people. And especially at the end of his life, he had to work for the Buddha Dhamma. So undoubtedly, Baba Saheb gave some years of his life for the sake of the Buddha Dhamma. Then the Buddha says we should be giving our merit. So what does this mean? When we practice the Dhamma, we get some benefit. Well, that benefit isn't just for you. It should be given to other people. Well, even nearer to home, you get an education. You get, you know, a good education. You get a good job. That's through your own effort. But you need to give that away. You need to give that to your brothers and sisters. You need to give that to those who are still suffering. So whatever we make for ourselves, we give away. Now there's something strange about this. When you gain benefit from the Buddha Dhamma, you give it away. But the act of giving away itself gives benefit. So you give that away. But that brings you benefit. So you give that away. So it gets stronger and stronger. The more merit you give away, the more merit you get. It's not like anything else in the world. Well, usually when you give things away, you never get them back. But with the benefits of spiritual practice and of a good life, you get it back. Finally, the Buddha says the best gift is the Dharma. People need the Dhamma. They need to hear the truth. People are wallowing in ignorance in India. They don't really know anything. They may be very, very educated, but they don't know anything about life. You know, I know people with PhDs and they're so stupid. I don't mean that everybody with a PhD is stupid. But you find many people, I know them in Britain, they're so educated, so intelligent. But they're so stupid. They don't know anything about life. They can tell you all about a particular kind of butterfly. They can tell you everything about that butterfly. But they don't know how to live. I even know people who know everything about Buddha Dhamma. The only thing they don't know about Buddha Dhamma is how to practice it. So you can be very, very clever, but very, very stupid. And strangely, you can be very, very ill-educated and be very, very intelligent. Some people who know nothing know what they need to know. But it's what life is that people really need to know. They need to know what makes for happiness. They need to know what life is really about. And the Buddha Dhamma is what tells them what life is really about. So we need to spread the Dhamma. There's so much I could say about this. I think I should have been doing a 30-day series of talks. I did do a 10-day series here. I remember some of you were there. But yes, I've only got 3 nights. But Baba Sahib chose the Buddha Dhamma because he believed it was the basis for liberty, equality and fraternity. And so few people are doing Dhamma work. So we need to give the Dhamma. It's the function of the Sangha to give the Dhamma. So this is the first Sangrahavastu. We need to give the Dhamma. Give Dhamma. In all these different ways. If the Sangha is generous, people will be drawn to it. They won't be able to keep away. They'll see what the Sangha is like, they'll want to be part of it. So, I'm not going to do another one tonight, I think we've done enough. I'm going to be generous to you. I'm going to let you go home. But I've dealt with something very, very important at some length. If we can have that spirit of generosity in our Sangha here, this shrine room will be full every night. Sometimes I've come into the Mahavihara, nobody here. Just the watchman. And maybe somebody just going upstairs to the community. The poor Buddha is just sitting here all alone. He's teaching the Dhamma, but nobody's listening. But actually, this shrine room should be packed all the time. It used to be much fuller than it is now. So these four Sangrahavastus tell us how we can fill this shrine room. And the first thing we do is give. Everybody stepping through the door of the Mahavihara should feel something generous coming towards them. Even if it's just a leaflet telling them, you are welcome, this is what we do, this is what happens. It's really important people have some sense they've been given something. We might say, oh well, we can't afford it, no money. But you have to give in order to get. If you give something, people will give back. So we need to create that generous atmosphere. And that's not just up to the chairman. It's not just poor Padmanand who has to give everything. It's everyone here, Dhammachari, Dhammacharini, Dhammamitra, Dhammasahayak. Even Subhuti. Everybody should give. Everybody should be aware of this atmosphere of dana that we need to create. And you know it's true. You've experienced it yourselves. You've experienced the effect on you of generosity. Just one flower can change somebody's life. I can't think of an example straight away. But I've known so many times in my life. I've known this many times in my life, yeah. Maybe so, I've just given somebody a book. And many years later somebody will say to me, the fact that you gave that book really meant a lot to me. It wasn't what was in the book. It wasn't the contents of the book.
It was
the fact that you gave it. So let's take this very, very seriously indeed. Let us be giving gifts to each other all the time. Let's be helping those who are in need all around us. Let us especially be communicating fearlessness. Let's be giving education. I'm very glad that you have these coaching classes here. I'm very glad that we have our educational activities. Education is so much the key. Let's give away our own benefits. Whatever the Dhamma has done for us, let us give it to others. And let us freely give the Dhamma. And then we will be able to make the Sangha grow. So remember again, this is up to every one of us. Sangha comes into being from our actions. And that means each and every one of us. Namo Buddhaya. Jai Veer.